Open Mic on CJSF 90.1 is where you can listen to fresh new releases from any genre, any day of the week. Visit cjsf.ca for the latest open mic schedule.
Speak up. You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everybody. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF, as well as your host for this Tuesday's Speak Up, CJSF's tri-weekly talk hour, where we play a whole lot of local news and just general talk content for all of you around the Lower Mainland, as well as around the world, if you decide to tune in through cjsf.ca. And before we start today's episode, I just want to acknowledge that we are on the unceded and ancestral lands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples, who have been here since time immemorial, and I just feel so grateful to be able to host and share all of this with you. So thank you for tuning in, thank you for listening. And before we get into this hour, I just want to give a little rundown of what we have ready to go. We have an interview with me that I did with the executive director of the BC Technology for Learning Society, Mary M. Waddington. And she came by the station, and we talked about the organization, the work they do regarding low-barrier technology donations to institutions, as well as individuals, and the refurbishing process, and all the sort of nuts and bolts that go into what they do, as well as some new things that they're working on. So stay tuned for that. We also have another piece I did last week, where I went down to the Lonsdale Quay shipyards in North Vancouver, and I did a quest. That is right. I went on a quest with Anna Lynch, the executive director of North Van Arts, where, you know, she showed me around the shipyards, which, I mean, I live in North Vancouver. I know what the shipyards are about, but it was about the North Shore Culture Quest app. And the North Shore Culture Quest app is a new app that North Van Arts helped develop that basically gamifies the act of exploring certain locations throughout the North Shore. And I thought that was really cool. So I got to do a fun sort of experiential, soundscapey kind of piece on that. So that's going to be coming up as well. Got a lot going on this hour. But before any of that, I thought I would start off with some music. And I've been really into the Winnipeg Jazz Orchestra lately, that's right, and I thought I would play a track from them, which is something that I think we all need in the morning. This track is titled Sounds of Joy. Once again, the Winnipeg Jazz Orchestra with Sounds of Joy. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. And we are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is Danny Nesvedarani. Once again, that was Sounds of Joy by the Winnipeg Jazz Orchestra. And the next, I was about to say track, the next piece of content, the next thing that we have for this hour of Speak Up is none other than the interview that I had talked about previously, the one that I had done with Mary M. Waddington, the executive director of the BC Technology for Learning Society. We covered a lot of ground in this interview, from the type of technology that the society most often receives, how they go about refurbishing, their new blog series that they started that highlight some of their recipients that have really, really great stories that should be shared. At one point, Y2K gets brought up. There's a lot going on in this interview, so make sure you stay tuned because it is about to be played right now. The first thing I would ask of you is if you can just give sort of a brief overview of the BC Technology for Learning Society as well as your role within the organization.
Sure. So I work as the executive director, and I've been doing I've been with the organization for 27 years now. So I actually graduated from SFU, got a new job with the Computers for Schools program, which is what BC Tech for Learning delivers, and found out I was pregnant all in the same week. So that was a great week to graduate, get a new job, a lot of life changes. But what we do is take donations of used computers from the federal government, local businesses, and from individuals who are upgrading their equipment and want to find a reuse option for their old stuff. So we gratefully take that in, and we have a number of youth interns and high school students that are doing some volunteer work with us come in and work in the warehouse doing inventory management and triaging the equipment so that it can be refurbished and then redistributed back into schools, nonprofit organizations, or into low-income family homes across BC. And we do this as part of the Government of Canada's Computers for Schools program, which operates in every province and territory across the country and has been doing so since Kim Campbell was Prime Minister in the 90s. And because this is a 30-year government program now across Canada, we've distributed over 2.5 million computers.
Wow. And that's not just BC, that's Canada-wide.
That is Canada-wide. So our contribution to that 2.5 million is to 208,000.
And, you know, one thing you had mentioned is the youth hiring aspect of the organization and hiring people that are in high school to sort of help refurbish these tech items. How are you going about that? Is it strictly volunteer-based, or are there sort of intern paid positions as well?
There are 13 paid internship positions that we hire for each year, and those usually last about 6 months. And that is part of our federal funding that we receive from the government in order to hire those youth. And the high school students that we come in are great. Like they're coming in for their 1 week volunteer contribution that they need for graduation requirements now. And so we have really good partnerships and network with career counselors and you know, some computer teachers across the school districts around Burnaby. So we get a number of youth in from Surrey, Richmond, Vancouver, and obviously Burnaby.
Mm-hmm. And is there any experience required, or is just sort of an interest?
Yeah, just be interested. What we're really looking for, though, is someone who is interested in a career in IT or computers. And, you know, again, because the program is 30 years old, it's really seen a lot of changes because technology obviously keeps changing so rapidly. So learning how to refurbish a computer isn't like the end all be all that it used to be maybe, you know, 20 years ago. But it's still a foray into the computer industry. You're still learning hands-on skills. But what is also important is building that like team mentorship, the peer learning and support, and helping to develop those soft skills that employers are looking for as well. So it's a great way for youth to build their network within an IT sphere and work on some soft skills as well as learning the hardware skills.
What sort of tech have you been seeing lately as being sort of the most in demand?
Well, that is an interesting question because Microsoft has changed their requirements for everyone, saying we all must bow down to Windows 11. So thank you, Microsoft, for that. So we're seeing a lot of organizations having to upgrade their equipment so that it is Windows 11 compatible. We do get requests for a lot of laptops. That is our most in-demand item. Obviously, people want to have technology that is portable. Because we do a lot of work with low-income families, especially refugees and new Canadians coming in. Sometimes they're living in very crowded housing situations, and so they don't have the space in the family home to actually have a computer station. So they need laptops as well, just so that it's small and can be tucked away when it's not going to be in use. So laptops and computers still are the big items that are in demand, but we've got this really neat partnership with the Vancouver Airport Authority or YVR Authority. So if someone leaves their device in the airport as they're catching their next plane, because who isn't scatterbrained in the airport? If you don't pick that up after 3 months, those items will be donated to us. And we have returned some of them if someone has location services on them, which I think is a great news story. But so we're getting a lot more like tablets and e-readers, earbuds, cameras, and all sorts of things. So we don't obviously repurpose all of it because there's some privacy concerns that we would have to go through. We're not going to go through anyone's camera, but just different technology items that that we receive in that we're able to pass on to nonprofit organizations and to schools for use in their different programs. So the devices that we're getting from YVR in particular, like sometimes it's a gaming station, which is not really, you know, something that's being used for an educational purpose, which is kind of our core mandate. But if that nonprofit is like has a youth room or, you know, somewhere for youth to gather and, you know, stay safe and do whatever, you know, these organizations are providing for youth, it's fun to have a gaming station or a Switch or something for those kids to come together. They're not going to have funding for that. So it's really nice to you know, take something that someone has unfortunately lost, but at least to provide it into a new home and, you know, help create some community and some bonding and learning opportunities that way.
You know, I think a lot of people think that when something like a piece of technology gets lost by someone, it's sort of put into a lost and found, and then who knows where it goes. But the fact that it's being repurposed in this kind of way, that's really fascinating.
Yeah, so much better than, the, you know, leaving your black umbrella on the SkyTrain, right? I can't imagine being the lost and found there. So. Yes, I've lost my umbrella. It is black.
Yeah. You also said that, you know, this isn't just technology that's going towards nonprofit organizations and other charities and things like that, but also individuals as well. Can you speak to that? How, if you were just an individual who may not have access to buying a brand new computer or something like that, how would you go about reaching out and accessing that?
Sure. So we actually offer three different programs for individuals to apply for equipment from us. They all operate the same way. The only differentiator is who is qualifying that individual as low income. So one of our programs is the Connecting Families program. That's another Government of Canada one. And so in that case, you're being assessed off your CRA tax assessment, and families will receive a notice from the government saying that you are eligible. And if you're interested, please go to this portal. And then we work with them that way. The nice thing about Connecting Families is that it also includes low-cost internet. And so there's a number of ISPs across the country that are contributing to that as well and offering $10 or $20 a month internet for these families. So similar to Connecting Families, we have a program in partnership with TELUS, who is also participating in Connecting Families. So theirs is the Internet for Good program. So very similar, almost exact. It's almost identical, actually, to Connecting Families. But in that case, it would be TELUS, which is a corporation, obviously. But, you know, you have to you would have to send your personal information into TELUS to be verified as low income. And then they will offer you the low cost internet. And then if you're still interested in a device, then you get referred over to us and we support that. So the third program is our own Tech for Home. So that's where we're collecting the information and making sure that someone is eligible for that. And it is based on like your tax assessment or being in receipt of government assistance. So if you're a senior that and you're on OAS, then that's government assistance. If you're on disability, that's government assistance. If you're a veteran, sort of thing. So we're trying to make it open and accessible to people and not too cumbersome, but certainly wanting to maintain that criteria of supporting low-income British Columbians getting equipment when they need it.
Now, another thing I was curious about, and tell me if this is getting too granular, but when you mentioned that, you know, the requirements that Microsoft have now when it comes to running Windows 11, how has the refurbishing process changed as a result of that? Like, what goes into repurposing an older computer so that it can run modern software?
Well, that's a terrible question because I'm not a technician and I have not refurbished a computer since it was a 386. So that was a very, very, very long time ago. But we will put Windows 11 on anything that will run Windows 11. So it's an eighth generation processor or higher. So that's great. We are getting, you know, a reasonable amount of equipment that meets that criteria in from especially our federal department donors and some of the local institutions that support us as well. Equipment that doesn't meet that threshold, we are still able to put Linux on or Google Chrome. And so those devices actually work really, really well with Chrome or with Linux Mint on it. I actually went on a trip a few months ago and I forgot to bring my laptop home with me to go on this trip. And so I pulled an old one out of the drawer and I hadn't used it for quite a while. And it's old. Like, I swear I had that thing like 8 years ago and it was donated into us. So it's probably like 10 years. And I fired that thing up. And I had to do a couple little updates, but it worked just fine because our office does work on Google Workspace. So as long as I have access to Wi-Fi, it worked just fine, including having a meeting with a video camera. So older technology can work just fine. The images might not be as sharp, it might not be as fast, but there's a lot of use and utility that can still be had from a refurbished device. Mm-hmm.
Switching gears here a bit, one thing that I saw was a recent development with the organization is the Technology for Change blog series.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk a little bit about the Technology for Change blog series that the organization has launched recently?
Yeah, we're really excited about this Technology for Change blog series, and it's just a way for us to really showcase the impacts that the used technology is having in the communities. So the inaugural piece is looking at a nonprofit focusing on people with disabilities and accessibility challenges in Vernon. So, you know, here's a smaller town and people, you know, struggling with accessibility challenges, but and how they're trying to meet people where they're at and make sure that there's space and learning and work opportunities for them. And they still needed equipment and wanted to, and they took advantage of the equipment we had. And it's really useful for them because it was so much cheaper than what they would have had to purchase if they'd gone for new equipment or even from a commercial reseller. So it's helping them to make some real impacts in their business and as they're launching forward. And we're hoping that other organizations that have received equipment from us will come forward and say, yes, we've got a great story to tell, because we know they're out there, all these great stories. And we just want to make sure that other people know about them as well. It's really easy for us to widget count, like how many computers have we distributed this month and like where did they come from and where did they go? That's really easy. The impact on where equipment goes and how it is used by the individual and how it's sometimes life-changing, which seems kind of weird to talk about a computer as a life-changing device, but so much of what we do is online now. We can't access government services. We can't often do banking. Sometimes people can't do doctor's appointments anymore. Job retraining, right? So there's a lot of different areas where people need to have a device. And if you don't have it, what do? We might have to go to a public library, right? Nobody wants to take their doctor's appointment in a public library. If you are a mom and you've got kids in tow, you don't want to be going to the library if it's nap time, right? And having to child mind as well as do whatever important business that you have on the 1 hour you're allotted at the public library, or, you know, a computer cafe or something. So it's not just the, again, the hard skills of I'm job retraining, I'm looking for work, I'm learning a new language, I'm staying in touch with my family overseas somewhere, but also the soft skills about now it's privacy, it's security, and now I don't have to leave my home at night to still do the things I need to do. I don't have to take a bus home late at night, having used the public device somewhere else. So there's all kinds of like soft approaches about why having access to a device, like especially a computer in your own home, is necessary. And I've heard some stories too about kids in, shouldn't say kids, but people in university typing essays on their phones. And I'm like, oh my Lord, I would not ever want to do that on anything. I wouldn't want to do it, period, but certainly not on anything other than a BlackBerry, because I love that QWERTY keyboard so much. But if you don't have a computer, that's your option. Right. And it's not an option. You know, my son actually goes to SFU here as well. And he had a 28 page paper. I'm like, I wouldn't want to type that on a phone. Like, that would be awful. But
yeah, I mean, it's possible, but it's not ideal.
It is possible. Most things are possible, but they are not ideal. That is not ideal. And if someone is just, you know, this business is done with it, why shouldn't we give it to someone who can use it and get some real great impacts and success out of?
The last question I had for you is if you've seen a change in demand, or if there's been an increase in the number of donations or need for tech that you've been seeing in BC.
Yeah, so like I said, I've been with the organization for 27 years, so I've obviously seen a lot. I've seen a lot over the years, including Y2K, which was our most busy, chaotic. I never want to go through that again. And I was a little bit worried last year when Windows 11 came up again. I was like, oh my gosh, it might be Y2K all over again. Please, God, no. Because it's just, yeah. But we've obviously learned and changed our practices over the 30 years as well. The other big impact really was COVID, right? Obviously, when schools closed down and businesses shut down and everyone was working from home, and the spike and demand for our equipment was really, really high. And that settled down a lot after school districts in particular started lending out their computers or laptops into family homes so that kids without access at home could continue their studies, because obviously they can't do a Teams classroom if they don't have something to use Teams on at home. So that was really challenging as well, just from our perspective, because the demand was really high, but then the donations incoming were really low because companies were